Yeah, we've been gone. If you're a regular listener, you've noticed this too is new. It's me. I'm the only one right now. How are y'all? Is it spring yet where you are? It's nice here. We don't have a actual prolonged spring, but it'll be hot in no time, right? Do you get the allergies? Can I be honest with you guys? I'm trying a new thing this year, and I think it's keeping my allergies at bay. So far, so good. I can be notorious with allergies. Message me, I'll tell you what it is. So welcome, yeah, by the way, you've seen the title of the episode. You know what's in store. We, in a bit, we're going to run down Shogun, the first four episodes. We're going to answer why it's the most watched show at the moment, which it is. If you're brand new, or even if you're returning, welcome, by God, to the Alabama Takes TV and streaming podcast. I'm dying to know how you found us if you're new to us. A search, a fan of another Alabama Take podcast. Did you find us with the algorithm? Because no way that's happening. No way we're that big. We're that important for the algorithm to notice us, which is nice. That's what's nice about being a little DIY. But yeah, if you're a fan of another Alabama Take production, that's really cool. There are seven podcasts in the network. You can jam them all. We're working on kind of getting those umbrellaed even better for you. Word of mouth, though, that's really what you want. That's how things probably grow, at least organically. You don't want to be a part of the algorithm. Anyway, welcome. I hope you come back. If we didn't cover a show you like, or a movie that's streaming that you like, let us know what you're watching. You'd be surprised. We may get around to it. We do revel in suggestions. We can't guarantee very much, honestly. If you haven't figured it out, we are the Alabama Takes TV and streaming podcast. We help you see TV and maybe even Alabama itself from a different angle. Lord knows that may need to happen with the Katie Britt fiasco. Katie, we want to love you, but you're playing to the lowest common denominator, and you're brighter than that. Prove me correct, Katie. Senator Britt. I'll say it this week, and maybe for a couple more weeks, but we kind of fancy ourselves Southern thinkers who want to break the norm of what Alabama probably means to both people in the state and well beyond. I'm Blaine. I'm the editor-in-chief at the site The Alabama Take, which that's part of our MO there, a little, but it's also a lot of fun. With me every week is Donovan, usually. He's not with me this week, but he's a media specialist, film buff, Southern transplant in Sweet Connecticut. And we'll have Adam. He's a traveling musician, does a lot of studio work. He's an urban farmer who brings a literary sense to the table. Natalie joins us quite often. She's a college professor, reality series buff, who will be with us today. And our goal with taking it down is just to give you some different ways of thinking about TV shows or streaming movies. Pay attention to the timestamps, because we got a new thing going where whatever show or movie we're going to talk about, we're going to discuss if we can recommend it and to whom before we break any of it down at all. That'll help you navigate these episodes going forward. So guaranteed spoiler free. So what happened? Where have we been? Just dealing with existential crises, probably. No, not really. You're just trying to figure out what needs to happen. What's good about the podcast? What needs to stay? What needs to be ditched? We're going to pick up with taking it down on video soon. That'll air on Wednesdays on YouTube and thealabamatake.com. Exclusive to those two places. You have to go to The Alabama Take on YouTube. Taking it down on video will be airing Wednesdays around 5:30. And of course, it'll be there. You can always go back and watch it. We can't cover everything, time and work and shit like that, but sometimes we don't all agree on what to watch. Like this week, we found something. We found Shogun. Talk about that soon, but I've been watching The Gentlemen on Netflix. The other folks have not, which is fine. That's great. I have avoided a lot of Netflix shows within the past couple of years, unless they just get stellar reviews. Netflix is this, they're way more concerned with content than quality. They're more in the content business than the quality business. It's like they want you to have 100 things to pick from, and maybe one of them might be decent. They're way more interested in putting out 10 C-minus shows on Friday or Tuesday or whenever than one A-plus show that runs every Sunday or once a week on Friday. So The Gentleman on Netflix would not have caught my eye, but a friend recommended it, a friend I trust, and I liked it. The first episode had me really hooked, and I'll tell you why. It was entertaining. Pacing's well done. That should come as no surprise because it's created by Guy Ritchie. He of frenetic pacing, British wit. He's toned that down, though, in his old age, perhaps, because every cut of this show doesn't feel like it belongs in a music video for The Prodigy. He actually lets a couple of scenes breathe. It's still Guy Ritchie, and it's just enough of him to be fun and really entertaining and kind of funny. This one stars Theo James. You remember him from the last season of The White Lotus. His character, Edward's in the British Army. He finds out his insanely stately father is on the decline, and he heads home to find some secrets old Pa's been keeping. I won't tell you much more than that, but it has a lovely appearance from Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad and more recently The Mandalorian. Always good to see him in anything. And he lends that gravitas. You know, like when he comes on screen, bam, stakes are raised, and he does that here. Now, every headline online and beyond, well, it's going to tell you more than that about The Gentleman, but I'm in it for these three reasons, which won't spoil a thing. It's paced just enough of Guy Ritchie's signature flair that so it's not annoying, but it's addictive and propulsive. Theo James is tempered and likable in the role of Edward. He's calm and collected in a way that you want your protagonist to be. And there's a character type here normally casted as a male, but not in this series, and it just adds to the slight difference to the dynamic, I think, in a way that helps the show. So that's The Gentleman on Netflix. Hey, who knew Netflix still produced good quality shows? Yeah, they do. Every now and then. That's about all I've got. Solo. Just a Southern guy trying to get some stereotypes squashed. Hey guys, migrants aren't going to kill you. Let's get into the show.
An elevator tape projection.
Hey, here we are. A lot's going on. The world has shifted. Liberal elites think we're dumb in Alabama now. Did y'all hear the news?
Haven't they always thought that?
Oh, I was just kind of sort of referencing Katie Britt again. But what do we have to say for ourselves now, Hicks?
I mean, you know, I told Nat I'm not obviously a defender of Katie Britt, but if you're going to be lampooned by a national news outlet, one, it's kind of cool that you got to be on SNL. And that Scarlett Johansson plays you. I mean, you got to feel pretty good.
Just nailed it, too.
It was pretty good.
It was good. Let's gather around your old microphone and talk about Shogun. That's our one and only topic this week. And it's good because we've got our noted 17th century Japanese historian, Natalie, with us.
Noted.
Yes. It's a show with a little history, a little historical fiction. Current iteration of this piece of fiction is brought to you by the creators Rachel Kondo and Justin Marks, and airs on FX as well as Hulu. You pick your poison. You may remember the 1980 miniseries of the same name. If so, how's your back? Are your knees out yet? Have you had your cholesterol checked? It's probably time for those things. And if that miniseries, it's actually based on a 1975 book by James Clavell, same name. And if you remember that release, then you may want to begin planning your funeral so as not to be such a burden to your family. new to our podcast, though, we're going to give you as little as you need to judge if the show's right for you before we spoil a thing. First, it's our new edition. Recommend it with qualifications or oh, hell no. That's or any phrase you want to use. Let's start. Adam, Shogun FX/Hulu. Recommend no
strong recommend
strong.
You gave a few versions of no or
recommend with qualifications, like watch this if you
like to read.
Right, well, yeah, that is the only qualifier, I guess. Otherwise, recommend wholeheartedly,
full-throated recommendation.
Yeah, I think there's probably something there for most people who enjoy watching episodic television, but specifically if you are a fan of the sword and sandal or people lining up in rows and fighting each other tradition, as you know, longtime listeners will remember my just glee at the prospect of a Napoleon movie for several months. So this program is definitely more for someone like me, but I do think, and we can talk about this when we get into the meat of it, but the success of something like a Game of Thrones tells me that there are a lot of people out there who would enjoy this program. So wholeheartedly recommend.
I agree. I do think that sometimes when you have like this really big, like epic story that you know is going to happen, the first episode can be make or break as to whether or not you're going to invest in the rest of it. And I think that this first episode was touch and go, and not very lightly. I think because there was a lot of reading, this is not something you can watch while you're eating dinner because you got to pay attention. I think that there was enough in episode one to make me want to watch episode two. And then after episode two, I was excited and all in.
I really like the subtitles more than I thought I would, because it does make me pay full attention. If I do respond to a text or whatever, I have to pause the show. You know, I don't want to miss anything. Plus, it's so layered. Full recommendation, I think, like kind of like Adam said, if you're into historical fiction, yeah, of course. But I think there's a little something for everybody here. Not even a little. There's a lot. Just a little bit more information to help people decide. It revolves around Japan in 1600 at the beginning, maybe of a electric and crackling bit of tension. Japanese leader has recently died, and since his heir is just too young to rule, they're going to wait, I think, about 4 or 5 years it is. The deceased leader has in place 5 equally powered regents to rule Japan and all of its fiefdoms. And as that first episode opens, 2 things are happening fairly simultaneously. A Dutch ship guided by an English pilot named John Blackthorne has discovered Japan, which was long held secret by the Portuguese and their greed to be the only country to trade. And then there's 4 of the Japanese regents who wish to impeach this gentleman named Torunaga. And he seems to be maybe shooting for some extra power, or that's the accusation they think. If he's impeached, that's going to lead to his death and all of his people as well. Now, if that sounds like up your alley, as well as with all 3 of us recommending it, then jump in here and watch it and join us when you have. We're going to spoil it right now. Draw the spoiler line for the first 4 episodes. We're going that deep? Yeah, we are.
I'm down.
Yeah, me too. we've all watched the first 4. We'll take it as big chunk here and maybe even talk about it weekly from here on out. So spoilers are going ahead. The only 2 things I remember about the 1980 miniseries is that number 1, as a 4/5-year-old kid, it looked really boring. And number 2, a man got peed on in the first few minutes and I was appalled. I could not believe anyone would pee on another person as they were lying down.
I was going to ask how you remembered any of it, and now I know that that's seared into your brain.
Oh yeah, that's the kind of thing you just live with.
How are your knees?
My knees are good. Back's good too.
Cholesterol? So 2 out of 3 being good. That's pretty good, right?
I finally got able to sort through this dense plot. Is it that dense?
I think it is. And I think that you saying it's a boring show there is going to make me praise it even more.
Oh, as a 4-year-old.
Right. But I mean, there is the possibility to have a boring show in what this one is. You know, they're doing that thing where they're explaining. Natalie, in the introduction, it almost seemed like you wanted to compare it to Game of Thrones, where you have to do a bit of world building, you know, and then kind of pulled back because you realized, oh, this is like an actual culture that exists. I do think, in the same way that you would for, you know, even like an early American period piece or whatever, you have to kind of learn the customs and the things that dictate how that society works. So I do think that's a fair statement. So they're world building and introducing pretty complex conflict and keeping it exciting, all with like a very human touch.
Yeah, if you handle your complexity well, I'm all in. I like a complex story. You know, I like having to lean in and go, wait, that guy's related to who and why? Who's he trying to double cross? What's happening here?
but it's not convoluted.
No, it's not convoluted. It's complex. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate that Donovan's not with us this week, because one of the key points to note is that Blackthorne and his crewmates, they're down to about, what, 15 or so from 500. They are Protestant and they hate Catholics. And I just feel like Donovan would have a lot to expand on with that.
Is it because Donovan's Episcopalian?
Yes.
He also has strong opinions about Rome. he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. But yes, it's not only is there complexity, but it's intrigue. You know, that's kind of what I think is going to work for almost anybody who watches this. The intrigue, and since we are in spoiler territory, there's action and there's a little romance that's starting to develop. We'll get to that soon. But yeah, once Blackthorne finds out that Torinaga is a prisoner within the castle, and that to be his ally kind of spells death, since the other regents want him dead or are planning on impeaching him so they can kill him, there's that initial intrigue of, does Blackthorne want to help him or hinder him, push him more toward getting impeached and killed? And of course, Torinaga's using his power to use Blackthorne as a prisoner, as a pawn, to rile up the Christian regents against the other, what, two or one?
The whole thing seems to revolve around, these early episodes, those two men's motivations. And at first, it seems like Blackthorne's is like simply to stay alive. And maybe that is me projecting myself into that situation, especially after that very, very rough scene of what they do to one of his crew members. Yeah. I think after that, I think the stakes would be a little high for me. I would just want to continue breathing and be on my way. But he's got a bigger game in mind. And I think that the complexity of that was a little tough to understand at first. There were some moments that me and Natalie were trying to figure out, like, who's doing what on whose behalf and who's allied with who. And there have been some scenes at night that are particularly confusing.
In the words of Monsieur Jeffrey Evans, like most things, it comes down to money. As soon as Blackthorne learns this from a fellow prisoner, who's an old Portuguese priest, he was there to convert souls until he saw it was a lot about cash money himself. You know, he reveals, oh no, the Portuguese are really just giving these regents a ton of money so that they can, you know, have a good trade relations and make money themselves. And they've got this little fortress in Macau. There's a lot more going on than these people realize.
It made me think a lot of Silence.
Okay, yes, it does me too, but I never watched it, and I knew you had. I was going to ask, what's the relationship there?
I was a big fan of it. Natalie, were you also reminded of Silence? Oh,
yeah. Well, I kept thinking about how it's all I know about that era of Japan is from what I saw in Silence.
Yeah, is it the same era, or is it Silence based years before 16?
It would have been the Portuguese, yeah, spreading the good word and being forced to, you know, Andrew Garfield's character is going through this crisis of faith the whole time and deciding whether to stick with it, stick to his guns, you know, in the face of a culture that doesn't really want them. But he's also getting some it's been years since I've seen the movie. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like it was an extension of that world. And a lot of, like Natalie said, fast forward a few years.
Okay, that's good. Could be a good preface to this Shogun.
Yeah, and it's definitely, it's a more spiritual film. You know, there's a lot of,
if you watch Silence through the lens that Shogun is going, it's going to feel very like
silent.
a lot like, no, I was going to say like propaganda for the Portuguese.
Yeah, okay.
Well, really for one guy.
Right, but since Shogun is very like the Portuguese are corrupt and doing all these terrible things. It's just funny. It's just a...
Because Dutch and British colonialism is just sparkling clean.
Well, I'm not taking a side here, Adam.
Yeah. But I think we are to bring to the experience of watching it the knowledge that, like, there are no good guys, you know?
Right.
Like, he's painting the Portuguese as bad, even though Blackthorne seems to be just a complete loose cannon, both politically and... You know, Blaine, you identified him as Protestant, which I guess he is, but he seems pretty loosely affiliated.
Maybe a little more agnostic about it.
Yeah.
It's impressive how these Japanese soldiers managed to get a head off with one blow. That's got to be a sharp sword, right? That does that. Is it in the method of the strike?
I don't know.
I don't either.
You know, this happens a lot in if you watch samurai adjacent
yeah.
films.
Is that realistic? You know, yeah, I guess it is, right?
I mean, when they would do the ritualistic suicide, there was the second behind them who, as soon as they make the cut, they cut their head off. I mean, that's real.
Apparently, though, from my reading of this iteration of Shogun, they are trying to keep it as very realistic as possible. The fact that this version has Blackthorn teaching them how to use cannons is different than the others because they would have already known about rifles for 20 years or so. So him going, here's how you shoot a rifle, that would have been very unrealistic.
That would have been an easier show to make in a lot of ways.
It would have been less expensive, yeah.
Well, and also the just people who were fighting with swords suddenly having guns. It's like, well, we know who has the advantage.
I love the reveal with Blackthorn telling Torinaga through the translation of Mikau. What's her name? I've got it written.
Nobody knows.
Nobody's brave enough to try to remember.
Well, I've got it somewhere. I just I can see it kind of spelled. I just had to think about how I would pronounce it. Anyway, through her, which she's going to be a big factor of our conversation in just a second, you know, he reveals this, that, hey, these Portuguese, they're planning to insert Catholic rulers across the board. And that's just such a great moment because Torinaga gives this, you know, this guy is playing such nuance. You know, it's a barely lifted eyebrow that he's doing, and you're supposed to read that with some depth. And I just love it. But he says, did he really use the word gave? Wasn't that the word he uses? That they gave us?
Something like that, or allowed, or it just implied that...
Yeah, that they were the underling.
Like second class, yeah.
And it's just a huge moment, and they don't try to push your nose into it. Torinaga already has a little bit of a silent rage of knowing that there's people who want him ousted. Just kudos to that guy and his performance.
That scene that you're describing where he's... Blackthorn is asked to draw the world as he knows it.
Mm-hmm.
Is such a good, because when you brought up the fact that everything is through this shroud of translators for him, like his survival depends on people telling the truth about what he's saying in Japanese, both that and like draw the world as you think it is, you know, like how imagine living in a time where like not everybody agrees or knows about what continents are where.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy.
What I loved about that too is, if you were to not be paying very much attention to the show or maybe walking through the room while your husband or wife is watching this, you would think that's the most unimportant scene you've ever... You would shrug your shoulders, I'm sure. But if you're a fan of the show or you've been watching it carefully, that is a lean-in moment where you're just like, he just dropped a knowledge bomb on Torinaga, and Torinaga's probably about to get really angry.
And it just defined the stakes of...
Yeah.
It raises the level of adventure that Blackthorn's on, that he can be somewhere where people don't even know what London is, you know, and how much danger he's in, that he has to trust people to interpret his words properly. It's just wild. It's to go back to what Natalie was hinting at, the world building of it is very good.
And they're not going to do this, I wouldn't imagine, but the visual juxtaposition of London versus 1600 Japan versus 1600 London. We've all seen, right. You know, the creators are using our knowledge of all these shows we've seen about Jack the Ripper would honestly be too modern. You know, the dirty, filthy, muddy streets of London at this time.
Right.
Versus
shit-covered streets and
yeah.
Sooty faces and all that. Right. Yeah.
Cosmo Jarvis is the actor playing Blackthorn. Did not know him at all. And I was surprised an unknown actor landed the part. But he is killing it, despite running where Tom Hardy walked.
We definitely had a moment in the first episode where we said, this guy looks like four different actors in one.
I kept thinking, wait, is this Tom Hardy? Why does he sound like Tom Hardy? Is he trying to do
it? The haircut has done him some favors.
The haircut works wonders. Yeah, and he's a nice looking guy after the haircut. His line reading of two baths in 1 week... was good stuff. That's incredulous enough to be hilarious, which isn't even accounting for his line for in the third episode about a doctor. If he's not a warlock, he's most certainly a pimp.
I do think this show is probably, if you're a native Japanese speaker, I think this show is a lot funnier than what we get through the translation.
Yeah, it could be. I still think it's kind of funny. It's amazing that they are allowing or able to sprinkle some humor in. It's a good balancing act of that, as well as the political with the mental. This fish out of water guy, like Adam was talking about, having to learn about his fate through a translation that he may or may not could trust, at least not in the beginning. I think he does come to trust the lady who's helping him.
Hey, this is Jeremy from Polyphonic Press. Along with my co-host and best friend, John Van Dyke, we are exploring classic albums completely at random. At the top of each show, we have no idea what album we're going to be listening to. We have the patented random album generator to give us an album. Sometimes it's an album we're very familiar with, and sometimes it's an artist we have never heard of. Either way, it gives us a chance to really listen to these classic releases, and gives us insights that we may never have thought of before.
For something to come out of them. Maybe he needed the other Beatles in the room at that time.
Well, I think so, and I think if you watch that Peter Jackson documentary from a few years ago about the Let It Be sessions, I think, you know, it was kind of, the writing was on the wall. I mean, they were breaking up.
John Lennon didn't sign the papers to officially dissolve the Beatles until 1974.
So if this sounds interesting, be sure to follow Polyphonic Press on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and everywhere else podcasts are available. We upload every Tuesday morning, and we strongly encourage you to listen along with us. Cheers.
Don't forget to visit thealabamatake.com as well as The Alabama Take on YouTube. Now back to this week's episode of Taking It Down. We did mention lots of Game of Thrones comparisons online, like Game of Thrones, but with samurais. I don't find it quite as close as maybe those comparisons would make. Honestly, to me, it's a lot more like Deadwood, but in Japan. Well, I know you guys haven't seen Deadwood, but I think fans of Deadwood can see this too, because it has that political complexity, but with guns, right? With the six shooter.
Yeah, when I brought that up, the Game of Thrones comparison, it was going to be to praise this show for not leaning into what I think Game of Thrones could do at times, which is lowest common denominator shock factor over
boobies.
Yeah, or just brutal death or whatever.
Yeah. It doesn't do that.
There's a verb that everybody's going to laugh. It's like titillation almost on Game of Thrones. instead of just actual strong storytelling. You know, obviously, Game of Thrones was at a time a great show with a great world and storylines, but this just has relied on fairly grounded, complex, nuanced story. It's so impressive. And it seemed like there was a race to shock in the wake of Game of Thrones season one that this is not falling into the trap. And I know it has a source material.
Yeah.
So it has that going for it, but it just seems like, oh, we're making shows, again, that just kind of slow burn into something good.
As complex as some of these plot lines can be, what about this third episode, which was basically nothing more than a jailbreak in 1600 Japan and a hell of a boat race? That was just, you know, let's just simplify. Everybody understands Blackthorn, Toranaga, they need to get the hell out of the city. And they got these little cloak and dagger moves to get Toranaga hidden, and then they're on the boat in the middle of the night racing. It's good stuff.
Well, and they kind of come to respect Blackthorn. It gives them a chance to be shown to be tougher and more streetwise than maybe they understood.
Oh, yeah.
At first, when he's kind of clued in on what's going on. And
yeah, he's less barbarian.
And assists. Right.
And there's also the joy of the show is that you don't know who's going to double cross whom and when this Japanese stoicism may erupt into blood. I feel like any scene could just end up with somebody drawing their sword and chopping one another up.
Well, they did do the thing where they defined the stakes and the shock of it when the guy who loses his temper in the first episode is condemned to the ritualistic suicide. So yes. You know when he's
so sad.
It's not just like a cute thing where he. But he, I say they don't do the shock factor. They did kill a baby in the first episode, so maybe I should
not on screen. Yeah. Just to be fair to the show.
Right. But you know that when he hides in that transport thing, that if he gets caught, everyone with him is going to die. Mm-hmm.
Kind of easy to forget that Yashabushi, Yab, oh man, I really am going to butcher his poor name. He's the lord who put one of the sailors to death by boiling him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he smirks, it just cracks me up. It makes me smile because it's interesting that he's so obsessed with death. It's probably foreshadowing, one would think. But he's, you know, when he boils the sailor, he asks, at what point did he die? When did he lose life or whatever? And then he brings it up again with Torunaga a couple of times. And with, you know, he's also aligned with Ishido, one of the other regents. He's a former soldier for him, I think. But now he's with Torunaga. Because Torunaga has given him a fiefdom, I suppose.
The ways that they are counting loyalty and double crosses and respect and all of these things we're having to learn the world of the show. I mean, obviously the guy who wrote the source material was just writing a good book. I'm not sure it would be historically accurate, so I'm not saying like learning Japanese society or whatever, but the rules are a little different than if this were in Western Europe in a similar time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're kind of like Blackthorn in that way.
Right. So his character is, you can't really figure out just how selfish and ambitious he is versus, because he comes across at first as like the kid going towards the anthill with a magnifying glass, that he's just kind of like.
Who is? Which guy?
You're the guy that you just set up.
One of the Fafdom guys. His name is, it starts, I'll spell it for anyone. Yasbushige. Yashbushige? I'm not sure.
We're speaking of the guy who fell off the cliff early on.
And he
now has cannons.
Yeah, he's in charge of the cannons for now.
Right. But you can't really totally, I can't anyway, figure out what he's about, you know, where his loyalties ultimately lie.
Yeah, these are complex characters. It reminds me of Torunaga tells his son, basically, there's no such thing as friends or enemies. You know, he doesn't regret leaving Blackthorn behind. He used him as a tool to trade. You know, they weren't going to allow Blackthorn on the ship, and Torunaga's like, fine. But then, when he sees what he can do, he makes him a high-ranking official. But at the same time, he's also sort of Torunaga's property as a high-ranking official. So there's just a lot of complexity to this society. It's like you know what motivates them, but you don't know what action they'll take because of that motivation, I think.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Is the fact that this show is so popular surprising to either of you?
Is it popular?
I think it's the most popular show right now. I think it's the most streamed show right now. Which is surprising because usually that's a Netflix show, almost always.
I mean, I'm not surprised. I hadn't.
Really?
I guess I haven't really been paying attention, but I'm not surprised at all. People love this stuff. That's why so many people went and saw Napoleon. Give everybody a historical drama and they're in. Little action, little boobies.
It doesn't hurt that it's getting a lot of comparisons to Game of Thrones. I'm sure some people are tuning in for that, but it's planned to be a limited series. I'd be curious if they push for more somehow, especially with its ratings and those comparisons. FX would be foolish from a monetary standpoint not to try that. Of course, I'm a fan of one and done if that serves the story the best, but it'd be hard not to maybe push the envelope with making more seasons.
I mean, I wonder where they would get more material.
I don't know, because I do not know how it ends, or right. You know, who survives, what happens. These episodes were filmed in order, and so Cosmo Jarvis learns Japanese almost at the same rate as his character does.
Wow.
I don't want any generous cuckoos when he thinks he's going to have to pillow with his consort. And, of course, the fourth episode, the most recent, is that's when the levee breaks on Blackthorn and Markio, their waters of love, that levee finally breaks. Was it too soon? Did that feel normal? Did that feel about well placed?
That felt pretty on pace after his he finally caves to regular bathing and is caught in the hot pool or whatever. It seemed like it was soon to follow that, right? I did think it was kind of funny that they have a very obvious chemistry and the husband conveniently gets left behind maybe 45 minutes after you start thinking, hey, these two are kind of hitting it off. How are they going to get rid of him? There you go.
Yeah, but he's not actually dead, right?
No. Mm-mm.
He didn't die.
And didn't die on screen.
That's huge.
Game of Thrones logic.
Yep. You know, I thought it was a smart way of filming to have them not even looking at each other during one of their best moments.
Mm-hmm.
As he sat in the water facing away from her. Something about that was a little different and nice.
Trying to keep some decency.
Sure. Again, I can't comment on other iterations, but I do like that this show's about imprisonment, be it literal or not, maybe imprisonment of one's own making. And I'm a master of the eightfold fence. Didn't even know it had a name. Being a great distance away inside yourself from what's going on outside is reminiscent of a wonderful John Prine song, too. Other Side of Town. You ever heard that one?
Well, it reminds me, too, of the advice that Michael Stipe gave to Tom York, who then turned it into a song. I'm not here. This isn't happening.
Yeah, that's it. That's the eightfold fence, which I think we all got a little of that.
You saying that about the imprisonment when they are at the pool, the bathing tub or whatever, and they talk about, you know, she's already told him we build our houses because of the earthquake so that they can fall and come back up. And she kind of waxes poetic about how death is just everywhere. Uh-huh. And they're kind of looking out over an expanse of water. It's like, well, they're just stuck in this like cauldron of a country.
A crucible of a country, yeah.
Yeah, that they're imprisoned in. Like, when are things ever just peaceful for people at this level of power?
Hmm. That's good. And then we'll wrap here with episode 4's ending, huge ending. Toranaga's son decides, no, I don't want Ishido's men here inspecting us, watching what we do. I'm just going to fire some cannons at them.
Heck of an ending.
It's brutal.
In terms of like a shock military, much in the way that like when Napoleon traps the army on the ice, you know, yeah. It's the same kind of like, oh, wow, how did the cannons get over there kind of thing? And he pulls it off. There's that. But then the brutality of Natalie, I'm surprised that you kept watching because the horses did not fare well in this scene.
It was rough. Rough for the horses.
But this kind of show has been made so many times in film and TV, like The Last Samurai, kind of like that Tom Cruise movie, you know, like where the maybe dignity of samurai culture is like confronted with the horror of gunpowder and brutality in the way that the Europeans have used it. Them just laying in their own, you know, physical destruction, and the samurai with his arm blown off, saying this is not
Jensen.
Yeah, still just being completely with it and not emoting any pain whatsoever, saying this is not samurai was good stuff.
Yeah.
In that long tradition.
Any guesses as to what Toranaga's doing in Edo while his son's making a disaster in his name? is that crucial? Is that important? It's gotta be, right? Why else get him out of the picture?
I think he's playing a game of chess that I can't keep up with as a viewer. Do we know how many episodes there are going to be total? 10. I hadn't looked in hopes that an FX may make a longer run than an HBO.
Yeah, it's 10, but I mean, that was the end of the 4th and things are very much escalated.
The 6 more episodes would be great, but it's a fun world to live in.
Very much. Yeah, it's exciting. Well, that's it for this week. Follow the podcast in your app, rate it, review it. If you like YouTube, subscribe to the Alabama Take there, and you'll see all of the Alabama Take podcasts the day of release. For Adam and Natalie, good night and good wishes. Your future's here. See y'all later.
See ya.
It's kind of dark.
How you think?